warning, boys and girls, get your breakfast and park your seat in front of the TV, because this is Saturday Morning Fever, the every now and then podcast that recalls the cartoons of our youth, and a proud part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm Ryan Daly, and joining me today to discuss a beloved cartoon with a spooky seasonal connection is my fellow Fire and Water Network member, the host of Tough Like a Girl and the Council of Geeks, Nathaniel Wayne.
After these messages, we'll be right back. Sorry, I was flashing back for a second there.
That's right. Since the show that we're going to be discussing on this episode is so near and dear to your heart, I'll let you tell the listeners what we're covering this time.
Folks, we've got a real treat for you this time. We're going to be talking about one of my favorite cartoons from growing up, and one of the few that I think has at least a substantive percentage of it that still holds up, and that is The Real Ghostbusters.
Ghostbusters 3 years ago, maybe, whenever it was, when Saturday Morning Fever started and took off like crazy on the network, probably the dominant show of the network, as you can tell.
Oh, clearly. Todd Dylan, what's that?
Right. When this one started, I had this idea that I would binge The Real Ghostbusters and we could talk about it on Saturday Morning Fever and, you know, maybe make it like a regular thing, like go through all the seasons. And, yeah, we never got around to that. I think something else happened 3 years ago that occupied a lot of my time.
I cannot imagine what that would be. And, look, to be fair, to go through the entire series, that's a big ask, because, like any syndicated Saturday morning production at the time, it had 100 episodes to a season.
Oh, God. And was it actually, like, I looked, is it 7 seasons? Is it that much?
It depends on how you break them up and whether or not you count the ABC stuff and the syndicated stuff separately. So I know way too much about this show. So here's kind of what was interesting about the way The Real Ghostbusters was produced, because there were things that were produced directly for ABC Saturday morning, and then there were episodes produced specifically for syndication for whoever wanted to pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
And there were way more syndicated episodes in a season than there were in the ABC. Now, so when people say 7 seasons, they're probably counting an ABC season and a syndicated season as 2 seasons,
okay,
even though they would have come out in the same year. But part of what's interesting to note about that is they had comparable production budgets,
mm-hmm,
but since the ABC episodes there were so fewer episodes, those ones have a much higher visual production value than the syndicated ones, although not as frequently as I would like. But sometimes with the syndicated ones, because there wasn't as much direct oversight, they would pull some concepts and get away with stuff that they knew ABC wouldn't let them do.
Okay.
So there's reasons to enjoy both, but certainly for visual presentation, the ABC ones are much better, and the episode we will be talking about today is an ABC episode.
Right. And not hiding it anymore, for the seasonal connection, the episode that we are talking about is from season 1, the episode When Halloween Was Forever. I watched The Real Ghostbusters as a kid. I don't know how long, but I think more than 1 year. I certainly haven't seen the entire thing. I couldn't tell you if I remember when certain voice actors changed, but I remember watching a lot of it, and yet I think it was just, there was a time that there was so many cartoons that I was watching at that time, because there were the syndicated before school, after school, and Saturday morning stuff. And I was just watching so much that I don't know if I could tell you anything about any of the plots from this show. I remember the visuals. I remember the theme. I remember the gags and how much Slimer was a part of it. All that stuff imprinted. But not much else, except for this Halloween episode. This one stuck with me in particular because of the villain character that we're going to talk about. out.
Oh, yes.
But yeah, like what, I mean, you said before you were on the Film and Water podcast talking about Ghostbusters with Rob years ago. You've said that Ghostbusters is your favorite movie.
Mm-hmm.
Did that feed into why this cartoon is such a favorite of yours, or is that incidental?
I mean, that's probably part of it. I mean, it's why I watched it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's definitely what got me there. But, you know, even going back as an adult, I think that the best of this show stands up on its own, even separate from the film. And especially considering that if you really want to be cruel about it, they take a lot of liberties versus what was in the film in terms of, you know, the overall tone of the thing, in terms of certainly the character designs.
Yeah.
Which they actually had to do. They didn't have clearance to do likenesses.
Mm-hmm.
But here's what I will say. Part of one of the many things wrong with Ghostbusters 2 was that it adopted the tone of the Ghostbusters cartoon. And as much as I love the Ghostbusters cartoon, that's not what I wanted when I went back to the theater to see it live action.
Mm, yeah, I get it. Yeah. Okay, well then let's get into this episode. When Halloween Was Forever, written by friends J. Michael Straczynski, has quite a long pedigree in writing for television and for comic books. I'm sure people have heard about him.
He worked on this episode quite a bit, and he did this one, and he also wrote my favorite episode of the whole show. This one's my second favorite, for the record. Yeah.
Directed by Richard Reynes, the original air date was November 1st, 1986. They just missed Halloween, just that cutoff. It was still All Saints Day.
Sometimes Saturday doesn't line up. What are you going to do?
There you go. The voice cast, the main characters, we had Frank Welker as Ray Stantz, Maurice LaMarche as Egon Spengler, Lorenzo Music as Peter Venkman, Arsenio Hall as Winston Zeddemore, Laura Summer as Janine Melnitz, Julie Bennett as Cynthia Crawford, and Bill Martin as Sam Hain. I looked him up. In addition to being a voice actor, he was also the writer of the movie Harry and the Hendersons.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. That one I didn't know.
He had like just a very small few writing credits, but yeah. And I guess the design of Harry, the, you know, Bigfoot type of creature, partially based on his face. Like, I guess he had a very large expressive face.
Wow.
Unless somebody got into his IMDb page and pranked him. But
that's mildly terrifying.
Yeah. All righty. The Ghostbusters return from clearing out an apartment building that should have been easy, but was far from it. Winston observes that a lot of their jobs lately have taken more work than expected, and the others wonder if it might have something to do with Halloween coming up soon. Egon is lost in study, but Peter gets him to talk by sicking Slimer on him, telling the hungry ghost that Egon has a cupcake in his sock. Egon tells the others that PKE readings have spiked in the last 2 weeks, which corresponds to when a set of ancient Celtic ruins and relics were transported to New York. The relics date back to 7th century Ireland, where Halloween originated.
PKE readings have been increasing all month across the city, but they took a real jump when some ancient ruins from Ireland arrived 2 weeks ago. The ruins date from the 7th century.
7th century Ireland? That's where Halloween started.
I didn't even know Halloween was that old.
Sure. It marked the transition to a time when the nights got longer, scarier.
The Irish and Scottish immigrants brought it to America, where we called it Halloween.
That's utterly fascinating, Egon. But what's the point?
Those relics brought here from Ireland go back to when Halloween started. What if Halloween is based on something that really happened long ago? I keep wondering if those ruins and Halloween itself is the reason why everything's been going wrong lately.
Maybe we ought to check those ruins out. Keep them under lock and key until Halloween's over.
You're kidding, right? What can some relics 1,200 years old do to us now?
Across town, two goblin creatures sneak into the Celtic exhibit at the museum. They draw an infinity symbol on what looks like an ancient grandfather clock. The clock explodes with arcane energy, releasing the spirit of Samhain, the pumpkin-headed Lord of Halloween. He flies into the night, summoning all of the ghosts and goblins to become his midnight army. The two goblins that unleashed Samhain harass Janine at Ghostbusters HQ, alerting the Ghostbusters. They chase the goblins into the park, where they're ambushed by a whole ton of spooky creatures. Slimer, back at the station, is drawn against his will to Samhain. In the crowd of other ghosts, Slimer hears Samhain discuss his plan to conquer the city and then the world and turn Earth into a realm of endless night. Slimer tries to get away, but is caught and taken to Samhain, who can smell the stench of mortal people on the ghost. Meanwhile, the Ghostbusters have been battling Samhain's army of ghoulies for hours when they realize that actually no time has passed. A news report tells them that darkness has spread over the entire world, making it Halloween night all over Earth, and with time frozen, it will not stop unless they can defeat Samhain. At that point, Samhain appears hovering above the Ghostbusters and pretty much confirms what they've already figured, that his plan is to make Halloween on Earth last forever. He fires lightning bolts at them when Peter cracks wise, then Egon shines a light on Samhain, causing him pain and forcing him to retreat. Then the power goes out across the city. Egon gets an idea to stop Samhain and sends Peter, Ray, and Winston to attack him directly while Egon puts his plan into action. The Midnight Army demands that Slimer renounce the Ghostbusters and pledge loyalty to Samhain. Slimer refuses, sticking his tongue out at Samhain. In response, his forces torture Slimer. As the Ghostbusters walk up the stairs of the building that Samhain's forces are gathered around, fighting all sorts of evil spirits along the way, Egon brings 5 massive floodlights to the street in front of the building. He hooks the lights up to his proton pack. Peter, Ray, and Winston reach the roof and confront Samhain and his followers. Samhain uses the weakened Slimer as a hostage, but when Egon is ready, Ray shouts, "Pizza!" and Slimer has enough strength to break away from Samhain. Egon turns on the floodlights, powered by his proton pack, that form a cage of light around the building, trapping Samhain and his cronies. The Ghostbusters up top fire up their packs and catch him, and Winston throws down the trap. Samhain and all of his evil forces are sucked inside. Immediately, time begins to advance, and Halloween night is over. Back at the station, they put the trap into the storage facility, and they can spy on Samhain trapped inside, brooding and waiting for his next chance to escape. Suddenly, the lights go out, and a floating pumpkin scares the guys, but it's only Slimer and Janine pulling a prank. The guys retaliate by chasing Janine and tickling her, maybe? It's probably good that the episode ends when it does. So, what did you think, Nathaniel?
Oh, I love this episode. I love this episode. Like, I have this episode memorized top to bottom. I absolutely love it. And, like, here's the thing that I always kind of tell anybody who, you know, either has only vague memories of Ghostbusters or, you know, people who are on retro kicks or whatever. Like, when it's great, it is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. It's not always great.
Sure.
So this is what it's like at its peak. Mm-hmm. I wish I could say that a higher percentage of the episodes were like this, but there are episodes this good, like across the run. It's not like there's a harsh cutoff point. But man, yeah, this is one of the upper tier. It's really phenomenal.
That was something that I was going to ask. Like, how much is this a good representation of the series in a whole, in terms of, I don't know, maybe plot structure or themes or tones or stuff like that, or just overall quality?
Well, there's a couple of things that this thing does that Ghostbusters would do regularly but didn't do all the time, which actually kind of made it more special. This one actually has, for lack of a better way to put it, world-ending stakes,
mm-hmm.
which Ghostbusters usually didn't do but would do every now and then. Usually a couple times per season, the actual world would be at risk. So it actually tended to feel more momentous when it happened because it wasn't every single dang episode. So, like, there's that, but the overall tone of it, it's honestly a little bit darker than most of the uh-huh. Ghostbusters episodes, both visually and in terms of some of the beats specifically. Like, one of the things I like about this is that you can always tell when the designers and the animators took advantage of an opportunity to kind of go nuts. And you get that with all the various ghouls and goblins and stuff that, and some of them are just in the background or are only in one shot. Mm-hmm. But you can tell somebody like really had fun making that. Like, the one moment I will always remember, and it didn't scare me as a kid, but I remember watching it going, somebody was scarred by this. So there's a point where this couple Is running away from, you know,
these this, I had the exact same. I know what you're talking about. This is the same thing that I thought. Yeah.
These ghouls are chasing. They run into a diner. They're like, oh, it's okay. We're safe now. And, you know, everyone in the diner is just looking away from them. Then they all turn to them and they're all skeletons.
Yes.
And the waitress goes, can I get you anything before I get you? And lunges at the camera. And we never see that couple again.
Exactly. Yes. I love that moment. And actually, that was one of the first notes that I thought of. And one of the things that kind of led to this question was this episode, despite being, you know, whatever, 20-something minutes for a Saturday morning cartoon, this felt more cinematic than I remembered some of the other episodes and as much. And I was like, this, with a few tweaks, could have been stretched out to be the plot of a movie. And they really indulged some things like that. Like, those are nobody characters. Like, those aren't people that we know that we've ever seen before or will ever see again. It's just this little bit of, like, part of a musical montage where they just show parts of New York being terrorized by these ghosts. Like, that's something you see in the movies. The cartoons would rarely spend the time or the effort on that. Like, they just, like, you'd skip it because people want to see the main characters. But the fact that they trusted the audience and they would do something like that, I was like, that's really, really cool. I love that moment.
Yeah, and I wonder how much of that is J. Michael Straczynski, because the other, like, my favorite episode of all time is Mr. Sandman Dream Me a Dream, which he also wrote and also took the time to have little divergences like that and also had the opportunity for the designers to go crazy. So I need to, like, go through a list of the ones he specifically wrote, because I think some of these aspects that we're talking about are kind of specific to him and how he came at this show. It's just, there's so much that I love about this, and there's so many great little moments. And since you mentioned the music, this is one of the episodes that had a song recorded specifically for it, because they had Midnight Action.
Yeah, the Frankenstein is groovy. Like, I had that stuck in my head after I watched this. Yeah, I love it. And but again, yeah, this is an original song for this show. I was like, but this would be perfectly fitting in, like, that first movie from 1984. Like, we had scenes like this where the ghosts are just coming up out of the sewers and terrorizing, like, regular pedestrian New Yorkers and everything like that. I was like, they're putting this in the show and taking the time to go away from the Ghostbusters and Janine. I was like, the fact that they would, that the show would have the trust in the audience and the characters, and I was like, that is really, really sophisticated for what you would expect. And it's great. It just really enhances the overall quality.
And also, fun note, at this point, and not that they did it a ton, but the show actually built a little bit of continuity, because you mentioned the reporter, Cynthia Crawford. She's a minor recurring character, because she had shown up earlier in another fantastic episode called Citizen Ghost, which is the episode that explains why Slimer is in the firehouse.
Okay, yeah.
So she had been introduced previously, and then shows up here again with no real ceremony. She's just, oh, we need a reporter. Hey, we've got one already. Let's reuse her. Mm-hmm. And again, it's given that she never becomes a regular feature, it's not something you'd expect them to take the time to bother doing. Mm-hmm. God, I love this show.
She basically opens the show. It could have just began with the Ghostbusters in that building trying to basically clear it out, but it actually opens up with the news crew showing up, and she's doing her stand-up outside the building, kind of describing it, giving us some exposition. And then when they come out, she has her little beat with Venkman. But that's it. But I was like, yeah, now we have this kind of character, and it sort of... it makes it just a more lived-in world.
Yeah, and the main characters are great in this too, because Peter's at his sarcastic best.
Mm-hmm.
Like the first time we see him, it's inside during this initial thing they're trying to deal with, and Winston's like, "I got to catch my breath," and you just hear Peter goes, "Hey, Winston, what's small and hairy and green all over? There's no time for jokes, Peter. Who's joking?" And Peter just kind of backs into the hallway, holding this chair between himself and this small, hairy, green thing.
Yeah, actually, like, getting into the core cast, and I'm sure we've talked about it. You know, oh, listeners, you may recall that Nathaniel and I used to do our regular Crossing the Streams podcast that we had, which, you know, however many, what felt like hundreds of episodes of that we did. Have we talked about our favorite Ghostbusters? I think we're probably in the, like, kind of like the same boat. Like, for me, at least, when I was a kid, I mean, you loved Venkman because it's Bill Murray, and he is the funny one. He's the sarcastic one. You love him. And I liked Dan Aykroyd as Ray because he's just more comical, and he has, like, a lot more physical humor and jokes and everything. And just as I've grown up, I feel much more akin to Winston and also a little bit more Egon. Like, I've just shifted away from, like, the two that I used to think were boring are now the two that I'm like, yeah, those are definitely the two who I would hang out with.
Yeah, we're kind of in a similar boat. See, my initial love was for Ray because he had that childlike energy that, like, this is one of those movies that I cannot remember watching for the first time. That's how young I was when I saw it. So, you know, I bonded with him and his enthusiasm. And then as I got a little older and, you know, the cynicism starts to seep in, connected more with Venkman because he's a wise ass. Mm-hmm. But yeah, as an adult now, like, oh, Winston's my man. I love him.
He's just there for a paycheck. He's just like,
he just
showed up because he was an out of work firefighter, and he's like, this is basically the same type of job.
Yeah, he's just here to punch in and punch out.
Yeah,
awesome, and he's just as good at doing this as anybody else. Great.
Yeah. And you mentioned before how, like, the characters, the models are different because they couldn't get the likenesses for the actual actors when they did that. You know, one of the biggest sort of, well, things that I noticed as a kid, I was like, why does Egon look like that? You know,
he's the hair.
The blonde,
right?
With his very coiffed, like, weird, not flock of seagulls, but really not natural blonde hair. And have they confirmed that Kate McKinnon's character design in the reboot was based on that? I always assumed that it was an homage or a send-up to Egon from the cartoon, because she's playing that type of mad scientist character.
I mean, possibly. A lot of that movie has faded from my mind. I gotta be honest.
Yeah. I kind of assumed that she was designed after Egon from the cartoon, but could be wrong. If not, I don't know where they got it from. But.
I mean, I could totally buy they just let Kate McKinnon go nuts in her trailer, and then she came out and said, this is what I'm doing.
So then the design of Sam Hain. I mean, this is why this show stuck with me, why this particular episode. This look thrilled me as just, you know, it didn't scare me as a kid, but I thought it was the coolest damn thing I had ever seen. And I started, like, drawing him, like making up super villains that looked like him in, like, my head when I was a kid. Because if you haven't seen the show, listeners, it's basically what you would expect. He has kind of like the Grim Reaper's look of just a very sort of reedy, thin character wearing like a dark purplish cloak, but he's got a pumpkin for a head with, you know, sort of like the facial features and everything. I'm pretty sure that when I saw Tim Burton's Nightmare Before Christmas, I think I was excited for it because somewhere in the trailer, there was a shot of Jack Skellington wearing the pumpkin on his head that he only has for like 2 seconds in the actual movie.
In the opening, yeah.
But I remember seeing that trailer and I was like, oh, dude, it's like the dude from Ghostbusters. And it's interesting that they give him more or less normal facial features. Like, he has, like, eyes and, like, kind of like a normal, like, he has a mouth hole with, like, these really weird jagged teeth, but they look like, you know, sort of like ivory, like, calcium teeth. Until that moment when they're, like, torturing Slimer and he threatens them. And then, like, it's like this blue energy that glows from inside and the thing fades to black, so you only get the outline, like it's a jack-o'-lantern. And
oh,
that's
yeah,
it's a
pure
really
jack-o'-lantern, that shot. That's a fade out to commercial.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, so good.
My little ones, I am very proud of you all. You have done well. But the night is young, and we have much to do. Much to do to make sure that Halloween never ends. That from this moment on, the world shall know only eternal night. So, a traitor, Bring him to me. You have the stench of mortals about you. You live with them. Help them. You disappoint me. But no matter. Night without end is coming, and you will join my midnight army, or pay the price.
Oh, that's the. I mean, it's what's great about that design is it's so simple.
Mm-hmm.
Like it is just a jack-o'-lantern head on a guy in ratty robes.
Yep.
That's it, but wow, is it effective? And like, I think part of it is that like when we say he has a pumpkin for a head, it's not like head size, like it's big.
Yeah,
like that head is too big for that body.
Yeah, just like very much like a Jack Skellington type of thing. Yeah,
So like it's one more thing that adds to it, but it's one of those beauties of. Simple, impactful design. Like, we don't need to go more complicated than this. This says, like, you see this, like, what do you think? Halloween, bingo.
Yep.
And also, I suppose, just to alleviate my own conscience, we are going to be saying Sam Hain across this. It's what they call the character in the show. Apologies.
How it would have been pronounced.
Apologies to any of the pagans out there who celebrate Samhain, and yeah. Like the show doesn't represent it accurately, so you just got to roll with us here. We're sorry.
I know. That's something I learned about that 10 years ago, that it would have been pronounced Samhain or Samhain or something like that, and even like the fact like now it's been adopted so much, like their characters called like Sam Hain in other like horror stuff and everything, like they just totally butcher the original pronunciation. But sorry, that's how they refer to it on the show.
I mean, like, at least this has the excuse of being a kid show,
right,
in the 80s, so like just understand that we know it's wrong. We understand.
there isn't a Gaelic pronunciation key along with it.
No. They didn't have Google Translate or speak to text back in the 80s for you whippersnappers who listen. What is our average age of our listener? Do we have any idea, or would that just depress me?
I think it's between 16 and 96. It's somewhere in that sweet spot.
Yeah, that makes sense. Makes sense.
like actual age, like if you cut them all and like counted the rings or maturity level, it's a pretty expansive.
So like if we're going by maturity level, about 10.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So like Samhain, Sam Hain, his motivation. I mean, it's like he's not a deep character. He's the villain. And he gets a sort of more or less a monologue, but it's pretty simple. It's just, you know, I'm going to take over the world and plunge everything into, make everything the Halloween. Maybe if this was something that was expanded and fleshed out longer, it would have been cool to kind of get to find out a little bit more about him. And I know he does appear. There's a sequel to this episode. He comes back. I don't remember. I don't know if I've ever seen it.
Don't. Okay. So like, I'll talk about it briefly. Now, realize, dear listener, Samhain is, I think, the only recurring villain in the entirety of this cartoon run. They never brought back anybody else for a second go. And it is such a waste.
Oh.
Because it is an episode where they introduce this band of kids, the Junior Ghostbusters. And they didn't stick around. Thank goodness, because the makers realized, well, that didn't work. But they are what the episode is much more about, and he's just there. Oh, God, it is such a waste of a return of a great villain just blown on this. Let's see if kids will like the show even more when the Ghostbusters are their age. Like, no! Why do kids' entertainment keep thinking that? I don't understand. I am bitter. I am bitter and spiteful that they brought Sam Hain back for that waste of a failed, like, soft reboot of the show. Yeah. It's terrible.
But I mean,
there's like one other recurring villain that was the Boogeyman, I believe. So correction there.
But yeah, I think like this was the type of character obviously, the reason they brought him back was because he had a great look. He had a great gimmick. It's an iconic-looking bad guy. And just, like, it sells it. You get the whole thing about this character right off. And I think... God, yeah, I really think like they could have expanded this and made this into like a movie or something. They could have done something more with this and turned this into a plot. I mean, how perfect? Yeah, of course there should be a Ghostbuster story that deals with Halloween and all of like the supernatural, and like this is when like things are getting built up and more powerful. I don't know. Yeah. I think the other thing that we have in common is getting back to that first movie. Like, my favorite scene is when Ray and Winston are in the car driving across the bridge, and they just it just stops being, you know, this movie with jokes and everything, and they start having this deep conversation about religion and spirituality and life after death and what all
and
of this
the
means.
End of the world.
Yeah,
yeah,
the end of the world. It's like, what does this mean? It's like, the dead have been rising from the grave. Like, what is this? It's like, yeah, it's like, okay. And then at the end of it, it's like, we need some music and a cigarette or something like that.
Yeah, you could tell how uncomfortable Ray is with this conversation. Like, how about a little music? And, you know, Winston just kind of says, yeah, you're just going to clam up now. Okay, fine, I get it. Yeah, like, I wouldn't have necessarily expected the show to go that deep. So, like, I get what you're saying about that there could have been more depth to Samhain, but even the villains that I love in this show, none of them are deep. They usually just want one thing, and it's a question of they want to haunt this one person or... you know, or take over the world. Mm-hmm. They're usually only after one thing. This didn't have the room for complex villainy.
Right.
But then again, like, name me an 80s cartoon that did.
I won't go there. We don't have enough time. then getting into how blown away I was by just like the sort of like production and the aesthetic of this. I loved how the climax breaks down with Egon is on the ground doing his thing, like getting the goblins to chase him so he can drive all of these like police floodlights to this building, and at the same time it's intercutting, and all of this is set to that music, that midnight action music. All mm-hmm. this is intercutting with the other three going up the stairs of the building, but we see like the camera, such as it is, the animated camera, is outside the building, and we see them just framed through the open windows.
As yeah, and kind it keeps of... going up the floors, and the various things they have to confront. There's like a mummy, and it just gets blasted. Yeah. And there's almost... this thing that like tries to fly out the window, and they get it with the proton packs and lasso it back in.
It feels very much like an old 64-bit like video game, where you're just going across the screen in like this one little box and everything, and the thing like comes into frame, and then they're out of the frame, and it's just I love that. I love that whole bit.
The visual presentation of this is great, and like even absolute nonsense, like these weird California raisin looking things that are driving the car that Egon keeps goading so that he can hitch the floodlights onto it and get them dragged around to where he needs them to be. Like, these things are so weird. It's like, what even are you? I don't care. You're adorable.
Oh yeah, so good. I don't know what else I have to say. I really, really enjoyed this episode as a little Halloween special. I think it's great. Reminds me of what I love about the Ghostbusters as just a franchise in general. If there are more episodes like this, I would definitely want to check those out.
I mean, I can make you specific recommendations. I mean, I'll get the plug in early. I have an old video on the Council of Geeks YouTube channel of my top 10 favorite episodes from this show.
We will link that in the show notes.
Feel free to use that, but I can tell you off of memory, my top three favorite are Citizen Ghost, this episode, and Mr. Sandman Dream Me a Dream, which has its own dedicated video on Council of Geeks, because I had to do a deep dive into that one because I love it so dang much.
You said Citizen Ghost is the one where Slimer, it kind of explains why Slimer is their fifth wheel or whatever, why he's their team mascot.
Yep, yeah, and it's. I mean, like, it's a sound explanation, it makes sense, and it also covers a lot of the lingering questions that you might have just chalked up to, I guess it's just because it's a cartoon and it's different, like, why their uniforms are all different colors and not uniform beige like they used to be before, why the containment unit is so much bigger than it used to be. Like, they do actually account for this stuff, and, like, again, the practical reason is they would have had to pay more to recreate these, to acquire the part of the rights to recreate these things visually. But they do account for these changes.
Did the show overlap with the sequel movie?
No, not in any meaningful way, other than the fact that I'm pretty sure they stole Janine's look from the cartoon. Oh my God, she looks so bad in that second movie.
I was just trying to think, like, I mean, like, do they like fit, like, could you like sandwich them like Ghostbusters, the real Ghostbusters cartoon, and then Ghostbusters 2, like, as one continuity? Would that flow?
I mean, it probably would, but no, not really, because the whole start of Ghostbusters 2 is they've basically been out of business for a while.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, the whole starting premise of Ghostbusters 2 is that almost immediately after Gozer happened, they basically got shut down. So, actually, no, it doesn't fit in between them, because Ghostbusters 2 ruins everything.
I know. I know
which
you.
Is one of my life mottos. And I'll plug a third video. I have a video on Council of Geeks about how I would have fixed Ghostbusters 2.
I know you hate it. It's been forever since I've seen it, so I'm in no position to defend it. But I will say, I will always come back to how much I love Peter McNichol in that movie, just for like a few of his line readings. Like, just like when he's walking around with his art students and he just stops by one and says, "Everything you're doing is wrong. I want you to know that."
I used that clip, but I was directing it at the film.
The film itself, yeah. And then the last part when I want you to know this. After they spray him with the ooze, I just love it when he wakes up. He's like, "Why am I dripping this with goo?" All right. Well,
I'm trying to think if there were any other specific beats that I wanted to bring up in this, because like there is just a lot of fun stuff, and it's got a. Oh, you know what's the one other thing? I actually appreciate the use of Slimer in this one, because obviously later in the run of the cartoon, it actually became Slimer in the real Ghostbusters, and that wasn't as detrimental to the show as a lot of people tend to act like it is, because they would still have the normal real Ghostbusters cartoon and then like have another thing that was a Slimer cartoon, and it was much more kiddie in terms of look and what it was doing and everything else. So it was like after that Junior Ghostbusters thing that I told you about, after that didn't work, they went, "Well, we still want to do that, but maybe we shouldn't burden these other characters with it. So we'll like make it its own thing and cram them together." But yeah, Slimer could be overused or misused or just eat up a ton of time, and wasn't always funny. Like, he always had to be there, but he wasn't always funny. This is one of the better uses of him, which is that he's just hanging out at the firehouse until he is, against his will, feels the pull of Sam Hain and is pulled up with all the rest in his little midnight army. And, you know, using him as a hostage, that's like it's one of the cleaner, smoother uses of Slimer. And because there have been episodes otherwise where I'm like, dude, can you not right now?
Yeah,
this was good.
I was expecting to be like just kind of just generally annoyed and bothered by him, just kind of generally thinking, I wish that he would have been absent from the whole episode. He never bothered me. And I was surprised, like, when they have the whole group of ghosts and like just like pulling him apart and kind of torturing him. Now he's just a kind of an amorphous blob, so you don't really get a whole lot of violence from it. But I, like, as an adult, you can tell it's like, no, I know what they're trying to imply with this. And that's pretty damn harsh. I thought Slimer was fine in this one. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was it. I think that was my last note.
Yeah. So, Real Ghostbusters is not streaming on any service that I'm aware of right now. It used to be on Netflix. It's not anymore. So, yeah. But folks, if you want a new little Halloween treat, you might have to pay for this one, rent it, or buy it. But yeah, I highly recommend, in particular, this episode, When Halloween Was Forever. I think Nathaniel will attest there are some other really great episodes from the show, and we will definitely have the link to Nathaniel's the Council of Geeks show, so you can check out their top 10 list. Who knows, maybe in 15 months or something we can come back for the 9th episode of Saturday Morning Fever and talk about this or something else.
I watch this episode every year because I own the box set of the entire run of the show. Shout out to Physical Media.
There you go. Yeah.
I'm telling you, people, if you love it, buy a physical copy. It's the only way you will guarantee that you still have it.
I was going to argue with that, but I'm not going to. All right. Nathaniel, plug away your projects, audio and visual, as they may be.
Okay, so let's be quick about this. Council of Geeks, I've already mentioned multiple times. YouTube, that's the main thing. There is the Tough Like a Girl podcast right here on this very network, which I do with my partner, Liz. Council of Geeks also has a podcast feed. Currently, I'm doing What the Frell, which is a rewatch of Farscape, which I am doing with Jesse Gender. There is a Patreon, which is actually what is paying my bills. Believe it or not, this nonsense is my living now. That still feels really weird to say. And although the Kickstarter for my illustrated fantasy novel has wrapped up, you can still follow that project for updates on when it will eventually become available for pre-order or purchase sometime early next year.
Very, very cool. All right, listeners, thank you for tuning into the show. If you liked our discussion, please support the show on social media by liking or favoriting the posts on Facebook or Twitter. You can leave a comment on this episode post at fireandwaterpodcast.com, and you can always go to iTunes and leave a nice 5-star review for Saturday Morning Fever or any other show on the Fire and Water Network. You can also support the Fire and Water Podcast Network on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/FWPodcasts for additional information. Until next time, thanks for listening, and happy Halloween.